Duke's Mayo. Do you get it? Because only the ones that get it really get it. Your friends get it. Your mom gets it. Your grandma gets it. Your neighbors get it. Sometimes a dog gets it. Get out of there. What else? Your potato salads get it. BLTs get it. Tailgates get it. And restaurants get it too. By now, even you probably get it. So get it today. Made without any sugar since 1917, Duke's is that little southern something that makes good things better. Get Duke's. It's got twang.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Beer Guys Radio Show. We're talking with Todd Boera of Fonta Flora Brewery. We'd like to issue an apology here as we had some technical difficulties in the first segment of the show, and our sound quality is poor. We did get it fixed going into the second segment, which is where the interview with Todd starts. So we do hope you'll bear with us through the first segment. And again, we do apologize. We hope you enjoy the interview.
Open up a tab, grab a seat, and pour a pint. It's time for the Beer Guys Radio Show.
You want free beer? Go to the brewery.
Dedicated to the art, science, and enjoyment of craft beer.
Yo, what's wrong with the beer we got?
Now, here are your hosts, Tim Dennis and Brian Hewitt.
Welcome to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We're broadcasting from the Beer Guys Radio Studios in Marietta, Georgia. And this week, we're talking with Morganton, North Carolina's Fonta Flora Brewery. I'm Tim Dennis, and with me, as always, is my good friend and co-host, Brian Hewitt.
Hey, Tim, how you doing?
Good.
Joining us today, we have Todd Boera. He is the brewer and founder of Fonta Flora. We're going to talk about the importance of brewing with local ingredients, aging hops, Appalachian wild ales, and the craft beer secondary market. Todd, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. We just got into your rind. We just opened that up and got it poured. Could you tell us a little bit about that beer?
Yeah, sure. Ryan, this is our second year making this beer. This particular batch was fermented in one of our 40-barrel Fooder Crafter brand-new fooders that we have. So it's completely mixed culture Goza beer, which is kind of contrary to what we can dive into that at some point, too. But contrary to what a lot of folks are doing with Goza, it's typically being right. Sour beer. Mixed culture Goza. Fermented in our fooder with our mix house cultures. We processed about 6 tons of watermelon in-house that we blended up and shot into the fooder for the fermentation. And we then aged it on some Tulsi holy basil, some organic lime zest and juice, and then finished it off with salt before bottling.
Interesting. Now, I'm not familiar with Tulsi. I haven't had that before, but there's a flavor in there that I don't recognize. I recognize all the other flavors, so I'm assuming that's the Tulsi, the kind of sharp herbal.
And, you know, that whole.
Very good. Tasty stuff.
You really captured the rind. And did you use the entire watermelon, or did you focus heavily on the rind itself of the watermelon?
We focused more on the actual, you know, flesh of the watermelon. And the problem that we've been finding, especially with like a beer that dry, is actually trying to figure out how to harness that watermelon flavor, you know, that everyone's loving about summertime. So that part's actually really difficult to translate out back sweetening with watermelon. Then, of course, that really wouldn't bode well for all of our really bone dry beers. So I think the rind kind of really takes hold as like what's left after, you know, our mixed cultures get a hold of that watermelon puree and really just kind of rip it to shreds and ferment it all out.
I think I prefer it this way because I have had watermelon beers and they're all right, but I kind of dig where you went with the rind on this. I think I like this more than if it tasted more like a watermelon.
You know, I think one of my odd quirks is that little white part of the rind that you get like right after the watermelon flesh. I enjoy that. That's a tasty part of the watermelon.
Totally. Yeah, it's much more kind of like cucumber-ish, but it's like, super delicious.
Very thirst-quenching. It's got a nice kind of thirst-quenching character.
And it just occurred to me that a lot of people, or some people, I've heard about this, I've never done it myself, apparently put salt on the watermelon, so it makes a lot of sense.
Totally.
To put it in a Goza format. I'm going to have to actually try that at some point. But
there you go.
It sounds insane to me.
You've learned so much about watermelon.
I know, right?
Absolutely. Good stuff. Well, Brian, another busy week for us.
Sure.
We got out and enjoyed some things. We went to 3 taverns, 5th anniversary.
Yep.
We went to all 3 taverns while we were there.
Each one of them.
All 3 of them. And some fantastic beer. Such a huge, amazing beer list they had there. Smalls was there with us, who doesn't get out to a lot because she's a busy, busy woman. But we had the whole gang there, didn't we? Yeah. So yeah, that was a good time. Yeah. And Smalls is in studio tonight.
She is.
No mic, but she's looking and nodding approvingly at things. But my favorite there, Brian, my two favorites, because they had it divided out where they kind of had IPAs and stouts in one area. They had a kettle sour area, their sour asylum.
Sure.
And then they had the mixed fermentation type beers, spontaneous beers in another area. And as much as I love their mixed and spontaneous, I didn't hit that, man. I hit the kettle sours and the stouts a lot. And the Mount Fang Bourbon Barrel Stout was my favorite, and my second was probably the pineapple upside down sour they had there. Those were both really good. And I think your opinion of the best beer is wrong, but what was that?
No, I actually think that Mount Fang probably was the best beer, but I think a close second was the Scotch Barrel Helm's Deep. I like that a lot.
That's good.
And I did hit that mixed fermentation. I did get some of the Inceptus from 2017. It's still a really good beer. Nice, soft, wild character to it. Pretty unique. I like it. So those were my two favorites. I also went to a party themed around a Christmas tree lighting at a mall, Tim.
That sounds very 1980s, Brian.
Yeah, it was nuts. Neighbor, it was kind of a housewarming / Thanksgiving / a Christmas tree lighting thing. I brought a mixed pack of Sweetwater beers, and I'm proud to say that I drank both of the Exodus Porters out of that.
Good job.
That is the only reason I'm bringing it up, just to brag about drinking both of them out of the mixed pack. And then I left the rest for everybody else to enjoy.
There you go. Well, you got your Exodus, man.
Yeah, so exactly.
That's also, just throw something out there real quick. Catlanta was on the show not long ago. If you're not in the Atlanta area, you may not be familiar with him, but he's a local artist. He does various mural art. He's part of the free art movement, where he paints his trademark cat, and he'll hide them around different places wherever he is and give hints to where they are so you can go out and get them. But we collaborated with him and commissioned him to paint an original piece of art for us that was the theme of Georgia beer. And we are auctioning that piece off right now to support the Giving Kitchen in Atlanta, which is an awesome charity that supports people that work in the service industry. And your favorite bars and your favorite restaurants and that, when these people fall on hard times, they don't always have the cash flow to make it through that. So the auction is live right now on eBay. If you go to beerguysradio.com, you can see pictures. You can get more info on the Giving Kitchen and on Catlanta, and you can bid on the art. So we encourage you to go check that out. It's for a good cause. Original artwork, very cool. So check that out.
Definitely good cause. You know, hard times, Tim, they can be hard.
They can be. Yeah, that's so true.
You know, I think it's time for the beers of the week.
Crack open a cold one. It's the Truck and Tap Beer of the Week. Craft beer and food trucks in downtown Woodstock. Truckandtap.com.
Well, Brian, as always, we have a fantastic list of beers. It's very Fonta Flora up in here, Brian.
Yes.
Up in here. So we have, we started out with the little Fonta Flora Beats Rhymes in Life, which is their local beat saison. We also have Break of Moon, which is a blackberry fruit beer. Hop Beard, which is an intensely hopped IPA. Lunar Aqua, saison with local barley and flaked oats and blueberries. We have Scoop the Core, which is the cider fruit beer hybrid. And, of course, the Rhine that we're sipping on right now. So, Brian, you have some other ones, but I think we've probably got enough Fonta Flora to get us through the show, right?
Yeah, I don't think we'll even make it to those. We might, but, right, you know.
Well, we'll do the best that we can. So, Brian, what's happening this week in the news?
What's in the news? The beer guys have the scoop.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Time for headlines.
So last week we talked about Sierra Nevada setting up the Campfire Community Fund. Well, this week Sierra Nevada is asking breweries everywhere to participate in a fundraising effort. And what you do as a brewery is you brew their Resilience Butte County Proud IPA. It's a recipe they created. And then you donate 100% of the proceeds to support those impacted by the California wildfires. The response has been strong. As of the last time I checked the website, 413 breweries have pledged to brew the beer, including recent guests of the show, Hardywood Park, Air the Dog, and Yazoo. So they're going to start brewing that on November 27th, Giving Tuesday. They encourage people to do it as well. There's a recipe out for homebrewers to get involved at home. So go look for that beer. Go drink it. So we've got some more scary price of beer is going up news. Fortune and Bloomberg have reported that bad weather and damaged Canadian barley crops could mean an increase in beer prices. Apparently, the price of barley has already gone up considerably on the news, around 21%. So a 1-2 punch of drought followed by cold, wet weather has really hurt the yield in Canada.
Todd, have you seen any impact on your malt prices?
Well, so that's a great talking point for why we do what we do, but we use 100% local malt. So,
you know, you are really coming out ahead in this scenario because
Don't have to worry about the shortage.
Exactly.
You're listening to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We do need to take a break, but we'll be back very soon with more from Fonta Flora.
Are you thinking about opening a brewery in the Atlanta area? If so, take a look at the Park at Georgetown. This unique community will feature a collection of restaurants, as well as a craft brewery within the new JW Homes luxury development, Dunwoody Green. Conveniently located less than half a mile from I-285, this enclave of restaurants will be the gathering place in Dunwoody. Krim & Associates, the developer of the Park at Georgetown, wants to talk to you. For more information, call Todd Semrau at 404-226-6526.
Craft beer forged with a reverence for tradition and new styles that start a revolution. Ironmonger Brewing. The brewers at Ironmonger Brewing pride themselves at being masters of barrel-aged, hoppy, and sour beers. They invite you to their tap room in Marietta, Georgia to taste and see. Also visit their barrel room for an intimate drinking experience with great live entertainment. Keep up to date on all things Ironmonger by liking them on Facebook. Ironmonger Brewing. Establishing a new standard in craft beer.
Follow the Beer Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Next Friday is Hawaiian Shirt Day. So, you know, if you want to, go ahead and wear a Hawaiian shirt and jeans.
Now, back to the Beer Guys Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Beer Guys Radio Show. If you missed an episode, don't worry. All episodes are available as a podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and never miss a show. We're talking to Todd Boera of Fonta Flora Brewery.
Todd, thanks again for joining us, sir. We do appreciate that.
Likewise, guys.
We're going to jump right in. We want to talk about Whippoorwill, your Whippoorwill tap room and facility, which is your new facility you opened up, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that location?
Sure. We've been brewing out there for about a year now. The tap room we opened up Labor Day weekend. It was, of course, supposed to be open about 6 months before that, but with everything, a lot of hiccups and whatnot. But yeah, so the tasting room is open. We're going to be open up all winter there. We don't really know what to expect. It is a very rural area. So we're going to have limited hours out there, but because it's a rural area, it's obviously a really beautiful place to drink a beer, and for us to be out there making beer it's a really special place. We've done tons of work out there already. It's an old dairy farm that dates back to the early 1900s, and when you see the property for the first time, it looks more like a monastery in Europe. There's a lot of old stone barns, stone buildings on the property, which isn't really like indicative of architecture in the Southeast at all. You don't really find like stone buildings right, like scattered throughout the Southeast. And so what makes our property interesting, we're at the mouth of a pretty large gorge called the Linville Gorge. And so you can see one of the rock faces that makes up the gorge from our property. And so, you know, really long time from, you know, stones being deposited, you know, or it being like a river valley itself right there. And so they were just taking stones that were, you know, coming from the property. I mean the farmers who first had that land and just building structures from it. So we're lucky enough to have it now. And we still have a lot of renovating to do on three of the original structures. But we have a 6,000 square foot barn, which is our brewing facility. It's a 15 barrel brew house. And then we have four 30 barrel fermenters. We just put up 250s, not 250 barrel fermenters. That would be insane. barrel fermenters.
So much beer.
I already feel like this is so much beer. So,
because you're coming from what? Like, what was your old brew house or your other brew houses? Like 3.5, 4.5 barrels?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 3.5. And we would brew into sevens, you know. So we essentially quadrupled, you know, our brewing capacity, and obviously more than that with the addition of these 50s. So Yeah, it's a massive jump, you know, for us. And it's been a wild ride trying to navigate what it means to have a larger brewery, and especially a larger brewery that distributes beer. You know, whereas when we were only at the pub, our original location, we didn't distribute really anything aside from special events. And, you know, people just came to us for the most part for, you know, for bottles and everything. But now clearly, as you know, we have cans and, you know, more mixed culture beer in larger volume. So, you know, there's all sorts of things that are, you know, that are going on right now. And, you know, ultimately we sized the system based on the ingredients that we could source. By the way that we sort of felt the current craft beer market was going, we wanted to size, you know, for us what we thought was sensibly. And, you know, part of what we hope to do with, you know, the property, we own 9 acres, and then we border countless acres of state parkland, which is really great because, you know, there can never be like a Piggly Wiggly or a Walmart developed, you know, in the field behind us, because that's all state parkland. So, you know, we really hope to, by next season, you know, have more of a working farm sort of manager or farm hands that can really help with, you know, the cultivation of certain crops. You know, like there's no reason we couldn't be growing the holy basil, the Tulsi that's in rind that you're drinking. You know, can we grow the 5-6 tons of watermelon? Like we probably can't do that. So
it's a lot of watermelon fields. So yeah.
So what all are you planning on growing there? It sounds like you have a very aggressive idea of what can be grown there. Are you getting into malts and hops or other secondary ingredients?
Mostly for now, secondary ingredients. Like we love the idea of growing hops, but you know, it's really just, and grain just takes way too much space and equipment to do it. And then, I mean, we brew with a lot of raw grains, but you know, that would be really the only thing that we could do with them. And then you still need proper like harvesting equipment, you know, combines and whatnot, but then mostly just like really, really large acreage to do so. That being said, we do want to grow some heritage varieties of corn. We do have plans for that. We have a whole variety of native, we sort of have this native fruit tree and shrub and bush sort of garden area that we've been planting for about a year and a half now. So, and the goal for that is to be more educational. However, we do have about 35 pawpaw trees in the ground currently, and we're hoping to expand on that so we can truly have, you know, maybe, you know, 100 or so pawpaw trees to have a pretty decent sized orchard that we think that we could actually be able to use in the beers. But then just in general, you know, we plan on growing the beets that we can use in Beets Rhymes in Life, and we can grow carrots. We do a carrot IPA called Alpha versus Beta Carotene, and we grow sweet potatoes and, you know, all sorts of things that kind of take less room for us, for our nine acre property that we have currently.
So Todd, with beers with beets and carrots and all this, are there, when you're coming up with recipe creation, are there any other herbs involved maybe that you consume as you're creating these recipes?
are there any other what?
Is there any herbs consumed to come up with beers with carrots and all of that?
You mean like holy basil?
Right.
Holy basil.
Yeah.
So how much terpene do you get from holy basil?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we've told this story many times on this show, but I feel this is appropriate at this time to talk about Brian's greatest creation.
Oh, yeah.
We homebrew a Saison that we've done well with. We enjoyed a lot. And Brian made a sun-dried tomato and basil version.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And to be honest, the taste was fantastic.
Yes.
If you like those flavors in the beer. And I imagine, sure, Todd, you probably run into that. You know, I mean, there's probably kind of polarizing flavors when you look at beets and carrots and that, correct?
Well, you know, and it turns out if we only just threw in lactose and vanilla, it would be a hit. So
that's the truth. Yes.
But yes, like those are clearly polarizing flavors. And we know that it's, you know, it's hitting a very select audience. And, you know, for us, when we were expanding, everybody's question was, are you going to continue just making those beers at the pub, at the small system, and then be cranking out, you know, like whatever sort of basic beer from more basic beer from the larger system. And of course, like we, you know, we make a lot of lagers now. I mean, we enjoy drinking lagers. We enjoy the craft of making, you know, as a brewer, you know, that's the highest like goal, the standard for us to be making super crisp, clean lagers.
Sure,
so
absolutely.
Like we're doing that. And that obviously hits, you know, more of that mainstream audience, which now that we are a little bit of a bigger brewery has become increasingly important, you know, but we've made Beats, Rhymes, and Life twice now on our, you know, so 60 barrels total, you know, of that beer since we've, you know, since we started brewing out there less than a year ago. So, you know, for me and my brew team, you know, part of what excites us every day is to be brewing with the ingredients that, you know, we started brewing with at the pub and why people know about Fauna Flora. And so whether or not everyone is going to drink a beet beer, like I certainly know that it's a very specific person that we're targeting, but it's nonetheless still an amazingly important beer for us to make.
Absolutely. Well, we need to take a quick break. We'll be back very soon with more from Todd at Fauna Flora.
Looking for a great way to promote your business? CedarStream has what you need. For apparel, stickers, signs, and banners, we're your one-stop shop. There are never any art fees or setup fees. And if you need your items quickly, there's no additional charge for rush orders. Whether you own a brewery, bar, bottle shop, or other business, CedarStream is ready to serve you. Visit CedarStream.com for more info or call 800-686-7488 for immediate assistance. CedarStream. We print America.
It's Brian and Tim, the beer guys. If you're like us, no lunch or dinner is complete without a pint or two of craft beer.
Which is why Truck and Tap in downtown Woodstock and Alpharetta are always on our list. Tim, why do they call it Truck and Tap?
Well, the tap part is easy, Brian. They've got 18 of them.
As for the truck part, that's where it gets interesting. Truck and Tap features your favorite Atlanta area food trucks daily, so that way you're getting a different menu every day.
Truck and Tap in downtown Woodstock, Alpharetta, and coming soon to Duluth in 2018. Truckandtap.com. Let them know that the beer guys sent you.
Follow the Beer Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Your revolution is over, Mr. Lebowski. Condolences, the bum's lost.
Now, back to the Beer Guys Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Beer Guys Radio Show. I want to give a quick shout-out to one of our great radio affiliates, Clay 1180 AM in Tacoma, Washington. Catch Beer Guys Radio on Clay 1180 every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific. We're talking with Todd Boera of Fauna Flora Brewery. And we just opened up your Lunar Aqua. This is a really tasty beer. What can you tell us about this?
Yes, we embarked for the very first time this summer, this spring and summer, on making clean fruit beers, so non-mixed culture. We've been working with fruit since, you know, day one, but they've all been barrel-aged sour beers. And this year, we thought that we finally had some room to add what really turned into a whole lot of chaos into our lives, as all of my brew staff would tell you, to making clean fruit beers that then got put into cans. And I feel pretty comfortable saying that I think we're pretty well the only brewery that does anything like this, because we were taking in fresh fruit directly from the farmer all summer long, whether it be the blueberries that are in Lunar Aqua, or the black raspberries that are in Break a Moon that you also have with you. And we were processing them in-house by hand, pasteurizing them, and then injecting that fruit, that pasteurized fruit, into the fermenter, into the fermenting beer. So truly a local fruit experience that we were able to put in cans for the first time this year. So Lunar Aqua, we have been working with that farm. They're called Perry's Berries. For a number of years. And the guy's name's Terry Perry of Perry's Berries. It's kind of ridiculous.
That's excellent. Yes.
Yeah.
It sounds great. Like something they'd say in a rom-com movie.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And they're great people. We've been working together for almost 4 years now. Like all the blueberries that have been in Nidahug, one of our Appalachian fruited Appalachian wild ales, blueberries all come from them. And so it was really cool this year to put blueberries in a clean beer that went into a can. And our invoice with them alone this summer was almost $20,000 worth of blueberries. There's about $8,000 worth of blueberries that went into the batch of beer in Lunar Aqua. So it's a really hard fruit to, because of how much it costs. And then kind of, as we were talking a little bit about off air, just how difficult it is to actually get those blueberry flavors to shine in certain beer styles.
So looking at the can, it reminds me of the interesting story behind the name. It's very much visible on the can. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. You know, certainly when anybody is trying to decide on a brewery name, it should be a hard one, because it's obviously going to stick with you forever. It's kind of like getting a tattoo, I guess. You know, it's like, so it better be a good one. It better mean something. And so it was a struggle for us. I tend to overanalyze, and for us, I mean, I have three business partners in Fauna Flora, and I tend to overanalyze everything. So I couldn't really decide on a name, and Fauna Flora just kind of kept coming up in conversation, and it ultimately refers to an old sharecropping community that existed on the banks of the Linville River, which obviously pours through the Linville Gorge. And that is the feature, part of the feature that I was talking about, the rock face that you see from our new farmhouse brewery. And so, you know, that brewery, we're really close to where that original settlement was, which is super romantic, you know, for us to be able to bring it back so close to, you know, where we took our name from. But ultimately it was flooded. The town was flooded when they, being Duke Energy, dammed the Linville and the Catawba River in the early 1900s and formed Lake James, which is the lake that we're on, for hydroelectric power.
Interesting. I heard the story. I was like, this is very cool. That's I'd seen the logo many times and enjoyed it, but didn't know the story behind it.
Yeah, the labels with the waves on them. I didn't even realize there were waves.
I didn't think about it. I just thought it was a design.
Exactly.
Yeah, very cool. You know, interestingly enough, my grandfather was a North Carolina sharecropper in the 30s and 40s.
Whoa.
Over there. And my family's from there. Do you know where Dunn, North Carolina is,
Todd? Yeah. Yep, sure do. Right.
That's where my dad's side of the family's from. We're from Dunn, North Carolina there. Well, another thing that we talked about briefly, Todd, on the break was we talked some about farmhouse brewing. And you mentioned your friends over at Scratch Brewing. And they wrote recently a treatise on farmhouse brewing that they published through Good Beer Hunting. And online there's an excerpt, and so far that's all I've been able to read so far. But the essence of it was basically kind of calling back to the roots, I guess, to farmhouse brewing. So the term's thrown around a lot, whether it's farmhouse beer or farmhouse brewery. What does that term mean to you?
I always hesitated with using that term when we were just operating out of our downtown Morganton location, which obviously wasn't on a farm. And it's something that I think about often. And, you know, for me, it's become increasingly clear that, like, of course, right now we're really, I just feel like we're incredibly blessed to be able to have, you know, we have been able to expand, you know, onto, you know, a stunningly beautiful farm. And we're sort of able to continue out our vision of what we think, you know, beer, food, you know, just things that, you know, what you're putting in your body and like what it can actually be, you know. So, and not everybody has that opportunity. You know, so what I will say is, looking back at it, you know, we've been using local ingredients forever. That's how we started. It's not, you know, it's not a gimmick. It's not, you know, it would be a bad gimmick because it's all really expensive and really labor intensive.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, what I think is to be a farmhouse brewery is really utilizing ingredients from your local area. And for me, I think that could represent somebody that happens to be in you know, in a warehouse in a city, but is using ingredients that are being grown around them to create their beers, you know, to me, that's like, that's that farmhouse spirit, you know? And so like, I would, if you want to use that term, like, cool, go for it. Because I feel like you're going there, those folks who aren't on farms, but are supporting, you know, their local farmers, like, that's the essence of farmhouse brewing. And of course, like, actually being on a farm, all the, you know, the hardships and, like, you know, the crazy things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis, just from being in a rural area and owning a brewery, you know, so I think a lot comes with that as well. But for me, I'm just so ingredient driven with what I think that beer, you know, should be, that it's very much for me, if folks are using local ingredients, go ahead and, like, you know, use that term.
Well, that's something that, you know, and as you mentioned, we do have a lot of breweries because we're not necessarily open prairie country here anymore. So you do have a lot more breweries in local city centers, and many of them are trying to go back to more local stuff. And I know one you used, Todd, that was a guest on our show not long ago, Riverbend Malt House.
Yeah.
You know, so getting the local malts and that, we learned a lot about the malting process from them and, you know, kind of the impact that purchasing local malt has, the positive impact that it has on the environment, and that when you're not trucking malt across a continent or, you know, around the world, things
and,
like that.
And as we've learned, it has a benefit of not being subject to the price increases when Canada goes crazy with their temperatures and their yields.
At least not now.
At least not now.
Keeps, if it keeps driving, everybody's going to be going to Riverbend.
They might be going to Riverbend.
Well, yeah. Unless the Southeast experiences that very same thing, then I'm kind of screwed. So
that's a good point. That is also a good
point. Keep stretching out the definition. Going backwards from the way craft beer is, because local keeps becoming more local with craft beer.
Yeah.
But if we have grain shortages, then your farmhouse locally sourced from Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah, exactly.
You should do what you got to do there, right?
It's hard. The price does not reflect the work that goes into it. And of course, with food, because of governmental subsidies, and we believe in what we're doing with local ingredients. But at the end of the day, like, we can't charge what the beer actually needs to be on the shelf, because at the end of the day, they're not willing to pay it.
Sure. Absolutely. You're listening to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We do need to take a break, but we'll be back very soon with more from Fonta Flora Brewery.
We are Reformation Brewery, celebrating the reformer in you. Locally crafted within the renowned Etowah watershed of Woodstock, Georgia, Reformation creates yeast-forward brews full of aroma and flavor crafted to last. Come see us in beautiful Woodstock, Georgia, for a tour and tasting of unique brews that you can't find anywhere else. Reformation Brewery. Set beer free. ReformationBrewery.com.
Craft beer forged with a reverence for tradition and new styles that start a revolution. Ironmonger Brewing. The brewers at Ironmonger Brewing pride themselves at being masters of barrel-aged, hoppy, and sour beers. They invite you to their tap room in Marietta, Georgia to taste and see. Also visit their barrel room for an intimate drinking experience with great live entertainment. Keep up to date on all things Ironmonger by liking them on Facebook. Ironmonger Brewing, establishing a new standard in craft beer.
Follow the Beer Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Well, I'm sure I'd feel much worse if I weren't under such heavy sedation.
Now, back to the Beer Guys Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Beer Guys Radio Show. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/beerguys. Patrons can get some cool perks like Beer Guys swag and commercial-free episodes. And a huge thank you to our newest patron, Elliot Hall. Now back to our conversation with Todd Boera of Fonta Flora Brewery.
Todd, we would like to talk to you about Appalachian Wild Ales.
Oh, good.
So we assume this is the Appalachian version of an American Wild Ale, but what differentiates an Appalachian Wild Ale from a standard American Wild Ale?
Yeah, it's just kind of our spin on with the types of ingredients that we use to create them. You know, so yeah, stylistically, it's an American Wild Ale or American Sour Ale. And for us at this point, we've been doing it for long enough where it's sort of like there are guidelines that we've created for ourselves of how we release them with, you know, with sort of that nomenclature behind it. You know, so it's, you know, they're the Appalachian Wild Ale is obviously, so we're always using, as with all of our beers, but always using local barley, local Pilsner malt, and local raw wheat. And then if it's going to get fruited, which they often are, the fruit is a really other than, so thus far other than one, it's always fruit coming from Appalachia.
So you have all these other ingredients. What about hops? Do you ever try using any kind of locally grown hops? I'm not even sure what's available in terms of a locally grown hop in North Carolina, actually.
Yeah, there are folks growing them, but the problem is there's really no one that is able to like preserve and package. No one's really drying, and no one's pelletizing. So a lot of the stuff, folks are just trying to sell us fresh hops. And so, you know, and we're interested in that. We use them, but, you know, we're more trying to, so for like IPAs or something, you know, we're not really interested in trying to explore North Carolina hops, but we are trying to source more local hops from farmers that then we can dry and age ourselves, you know, that will ultimately go into, you know, the Appalachian Wild Ale series. And this winter will be the first time for us. We'll be employing a cool ship for the very first time. So for beers like that.
Very nice.
Very cool ship.
A very cool ship. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now you talked about aging hops, and we noticed that you age yours in burlap bags. Does the burlap specifically add anything to the aging of the hops?
I just think burlap's breathable. So that's right. Just kind of why we chose. I think we just had a burlap bag laying around one day because we used to use them for table decorations at events, and just had some excess aged hops. And that's just kind of what I threw them in and just found that worked pretty well.
Now, I know aged hops are typically used in, you know, lambics, gooses, wild ales and that. What characters do they impart that's different than using the same hops fresh?
Yeah, and I think that would be a really interesting experiment to, like, do both side by side. Yeah, you know, sometimes a lot of that stuff is just kind of sticking with tradition, and so that's certainly a part of it for us. But, you know, the aged hops, you know, sort of having, you know, potentially carrying, you know, less alpha acid content because of that age, aging it out. And then just kind of some of those funkier flavors. I think that's even sometimes, you know, when drinking lambics, like that profile that you're getting is really has to do a lot with the, I mean, they're hopping it pretty intensely for a, you know, for a spontaneous, for what eventually becomes a sour beer, you know? So I think the hops really do play a pretty big part in the overall flavor and aroma profile in wild ales and spontaneous beers.
And those are really generally not given much credit in the flavor profile of those beers. It's all about the cultures and that, but because I never really thought about it, you know, using those aged hops, I guess it makes sense that they'd be a big part of the character.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's always kind of given credit to the wild yeast and bacteria in there. Yeah.
Well, and they are, but the thing that we also don't consider is that there is an actual preservative and antibacterial quality to aged hops that's still there even when the alpha acids drop. So by doing that, they actually help preserve the beer and allow it to age as long as it does. Yep. So that's one of the perks of it. I'm curious, how long do you typically age your hops before you use them?
It really is just a function of more of like what we are able to do. We don't really have a set thing right now, but as we sort of gear up for more cool ship brewing to begin with, and then, you know, making more wild beers. Yeah, I buy currently from, you know, say from like BSG or something, and they have hops that are already like East Kent Golding is what we use the most of. And right now the East Kent Golding stock, the whole leaf that I bought from them, was already from 2012, you know, so they're already very old, but they weren't necessarily like, you know, aged in my burlap bags for, you know, for that long. But at this point, the ones that we kind of have sitting around have been kind of aging out and, you know, open to the, you know, like the air in the burlap bags for about a year now.
It's interesting to see all that goes into that.
Sure.
The character that gets that. And, you know, I'm going to pay more attention to the hops in those kinds of beers in the future. See if I can pick out those characteristics.
When we went to the hop farm and we tried those old dried hops,
they did smell like a lambic or goozy. Yeah. Yep. You know, kind of circling back a little bit, Todd, to the beginning with the Appalachian Wild Ales. You have an Appalachian Wild Ale Society.
We do.
That allows members to get some exclusive beers from your Appalachian Wild Ales,
yep.
Correct?
Yep, that's right.
Now, one thing I noticed interesting in that, and because we know other breweries do kind of bottle clubs and that, but one thing you seemed to take a pretty hard stance on there was reselling your beer for financial gain.
Right.
And we know the secondary market is a big thing with craft beer. What's your opinion on the secondary beer market?
Yeah, I mean, the secondary beer market in terms of like if folks are trading, you know, we obviously love that culture because for the longest time, that's how our beer got to faraway places, you know, but it just seems and I'm not involved at all. And, you know, I never have traded. I don't trade. And, you know, I certainly don't buy beer on the secondary market. I think where the problem comes in, you know, if a brewery was charging, you know, say $100 for, you know, for a wild ale or for an imperial stout, you know, a lot of times like they would get eaten alive on the internet for doing something like that. For me, that puts the money back into the hands of the people who created it. You know, whereas we have a secondary market of, you know, sellers who are just going to a brewery and buying it for a lot of times a really reasonable price. And then they're the ones that are, you know, jacking up the price and making a ton of money off of, you know, just really, really rare beers. And, you know, I don't pretend to think that, you know, that is coming from a lot of like that happens with a lot of our beers. You know, we do see folks with certain beers selling it on the secondary market. And, you know, for us, it's just like we really want people, you know, to be drinking our beers, you know, the folks who are coming to get them to be drinking them. And I know that's rather naive in today's market. And, you know, that was kind of one of the reasons why we liked of starting the society, because it was getting to connect with a lot of these people, you know, really, really personally. We're having a party at the Whippoorwill Farm December 1st, where whoever is able from the society is going to come out and, you know, we're just going to have a bottle share and eat barbecue and throw down for an afternoon.
Sounds like my kind of party there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yes. So, you know, so we were hoping to kind of like curb that, you know, maybe some of that secondary market stuff with just kind of giving folks and, you know, if we started a society and it was people who were really vested in us, you know, and, you know, still it's like, you know, folks are still going to trade those beers that they're getting from us for other stuff that's, you know, around the country or world that they really want to get their hands on and stuff like that's great. You know, I just don't love the idea of someone else, benefiting, making a lot of money off of, you know, really something that, you know, they didn't really have a hand in creating.
Off your hard work, right, Todd?
Exactly.
You know, we're not super vocal about it. It's really like when we come across it, we try to nip it in the bud and try to handle it, you know, appropriately with that person. But to tell you the truth, it hasn't happened a whole lot, at least that we know of. And again, it's not like we don't spend time, you know, on Beer Advocate or on, you know, and not to say that that's happening on Beer Advocate, but, you know, we don't spend time like trolling the internet, trying to like catch people reselling our beer. Like, frankly, I have like way more important.
Better things to do, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode of the Beer Guys Radio Show. Coming up next week, we're going to be talking to our friends here at Ironmonger Brewing. We're going to talk to new brewmaster Sarah Green and operations and sales manager Ramsey Florence. For more craft beer info, please follow us online. We are Beer Guys Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Make sure to subscribe to Beer Guys Radio on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting app. Or tune in every week on your local station. Thanks again for tuning in. Have a great week. And don't forget to drink local. Cheers.
The Beer Guys Radio Show on the Beer Guys Radio Network. BeerGuysRadio.com.
Duke's Mayo. Do you get it? Because only the ones that get it really get it. Your friends get it. Your mom gets it. Your grandma gets it. Your neighbors get it. Sometimes a dog gets it. Get out of there. What else? Your potato salads get it, BLTs get it, tailgates get it, and restaurants get it too. By now, even you probably get it. So get it today. Made without any sugar since 1917, Duke's is that little southern something that makes good things better. Get Duke's. It's got twang.